Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back, Richard. Today, we're going to talk about college students. But not just about college students in general. We're going to talk about distress and well-being in college students.
This article was really interesting. When I first saw it, I thought, well, what is this about, distress and well-being? But as I started to read it, I thought, this is a fascinating approach to these two topics. Well, as it turns out, to these two topics.
Right.
But what struck me initially was when I read that college students have higher rates of distress than the general population. Mm-hmm. I would not have predicted that.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I both teach in colleges.
Right.
And I don't think of college students as being any more or less distressed or stressed than anybody else.
Yeah.
We understand that they have papers to write and exams to study for and schedules to keep up with and the rest, but I never translated that into they have higher levels of stress, because I was thinking they also have this wonderful campus and 20 or 30,000 people their same age to run around with, situation that they'll never have once they leave.
Not again.
You know? And so I hadn't thought about college students as being more stressed or having more distress than the general population.
Right. So today we're going to talk about a column or a blog post from our blog, psychreg.org, written by Dr. Abby Brooker, who not only has her doctorate in psychology, but she's also has some certificates in university teaching and everything. Mm-hmm. But she's particularly interested in this population of folks that are you know, university or college-based students.
Right.
And like you said, I like the argument that wellness or well-being and distress are maybe two different things.
That's right.
We tend to put them on the same spectrum, but maybe they're two different things.
Right. We tend to think of people who are people who have who feel good wouldn't be distressed, and vice versa. People who are distressed, and well-being may not be the opposite end of that spectrum.
Right.
Okay. And that what she's proposing in this article is that we look at them as two different things, and we treat them separately. Mm-hmm. Because what the argument that she's making is that if you just set up a campuses have worked diligently over the last 10 or 15, 20 years to build recreation centers and student unions and places where, and they have counseling centers. We interviewed Kip from Ohio State, who runs one of these large and very well done counseling centers to provide services to students who need it.
Right.
So we set up these systems to address distress. And many people make the assumption that if we're doing that, then well-being will follow.
Right.
They may be two different things. And that's what I like about her approach.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not sure, because I was equally impressed with the idea, with the notion of these being two different things.
Right.
But I'm not sure why I was necessarily surprised, because we see it in other areas as well. You know, you can be unwell physically, but still eat very healthfully. It's like, you know, I eat vegetables every day. I do this, I do that, but can still be very sickly.
Right.
And so the two things do not necessarily, it means that there's a lot more spectrums, many more continua.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like so many of these fancy words that as it relates to all these different things.
Right, because I'm trying to articulate this correctly. You could have a sense of well-being, but still be distressed.
Right.
Right? You could be physically healthy. I'm running, I'm exercising, I'm eating properly, getting enough sleep, doing okay, but could be distressed, feel distressed about something or many things.
Right. Well, in using that perfect example, you have people who put their body in significant distress by overexercising.
I over.
By
true.
Too restrictive of a diet, by, mm-hmm. you know, sleeping too much.
Right.
You know, you can do some of these healthy, quote-unquote healthy mm-hmm. things mm-hmm. to excess. And even though we would anticipate that to result in some wellness,
right.
We end up creating more distress.
And you wonder about... So the other thing she's saying in this article is that, okay, you can separate the two.
Mm-hmm.
You address these needs for students.
Right.
She said, but and she's absolutely right about this. If faculty and staff
right.
are distressed,
right.
dealing with the students is only part of the problem. So
right.
she also talks about an ecological,
mm-hmm.
A climate, an environment
right.
that is mindful of well-being and distress.
Right.
And, you know, you have students, and I know this happens, it happens especially in larger universities,
mm-hmm.
where... You can have a student who's struggling with some issue. They go into an office and they encounter a staff that is either demoralized or
right.
overworked or
mm-hmm.
understaffed
mm-hmm.
or under, and the students are not getting the help that they need.
Right.
And so,
right. absolutely,
if you're not addressing the everybody in the building,
yeah,
you're not going to achieve your goals
right.
just by dealing with the students.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It reminds me of. A number of years back when we were both working for a local university
mm-hmm.
here in town that, well, it's a long story that we won't go into for Dr. Marshall's
because of my well-being.
well-being. But it was a very challenging time because that was a situation where not only, you know, overall, everyone was distressed because
right.
they were looking to close the university and mm-hmm. shift things around. And so they were forcing mm-hmm. students in one direction, forcing faculty in a different direction.
Right.
And it was creating a lot of distress. But even those students who were almost done, so they,
mm-hmm.
you know, it really didn't affect them all that much. The distressing environment caused them distress.
It took a toll on everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, people were ending up in hospital,
yeah.
taking time off, taking the summer off just for
right.
mental health reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So it is definitely, again, you know, you didn't really think about it before, but these are really two different
mm-hmm.
things.
Right.
They can overlap, certainly.
Yes,
they
yeah,
can
there
certainly
is
overlap.
Right.
But they are, you know, perhaps two different
mm-hmm.
things.
Now I'm going to extrapolate a little bit.
Well, extrapolate away.
Okay. As I read this, this was about college students.
Right.
I was thinking about K-12 education.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
What we have done since No Child Left Behind is we have intentionally created distress
mm-hmm.
by introducing high-stakes testing. We have distressed students, families, teachers, administrators with this emphasis on high-stakes test.
Right.
We have created, purposely created, exactly what she said we shouldn't do.
Are you trying to suggest that when a student walks in, a third grade student walks into his classroom for the first time at orientation, and there are posters on the wall
mm-hmm.
about the end of year exams that will indicate whether or not that child will go to fourth grade or not,
mm-hmm.
you're saying that that's going to create distress? Richard.
Well, I wouldn't... Or the high school student who has
right.
been struggling, wants to get a high school diploma,
mm-hmm.
would like to get a job as a plumber or a mechanic and needs a high school diploma for employment.
Or go to the military.
Or go into the military.
Right.
And they know that at the end of 10th grade, they have to pass this test. And if they can't pass it, they're
right.
not going to get
right.
a high school diploma, no matter how well they do in their courses.
Right.
No matter how much work they complete, no matter
mm-hmm.
how many days of school they attend. If they don't pass that test in 10th grade, they're not going to get a regular high school diploma.
Yeah.
So we have created, intentionally created distress.
Mm-hmm.
And we wonder why the system is coming apart. And if you read this article and apply it to K-12 instead of college, you have created just the opposite of what she's talking about.
The opposite of what she says needs
we
to happen.
We should be doing.
At the university
I mean, she's
level.
Saying we have to create
mm-hmm.
all these circumstances for students, but we also have to do it for staff and faculty.
Right.
Everybody in the building
right,
has
right.
to have it. We've done just the opposite. We've put everybody under an enormous amount of distress,
yeah.
and we expect the system to work.
Yeah.
And it can't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know you were going to go in that direction, because that's a can of worms. That's just a lot to talk about.
Oh, I could.
Did you read that article this morning about Florida schools and
Schools of Hope.
Yeah.
Don't get me started. I will be talking about
Dr.
that.
Dr. Diane Ravitch writes a lot about these K-12 educational issues, and she's we're big
did
fans.
Did she weigh in on Schools
she
of Hope?
She did, I think. So, but
that's probably going to work.
We won't go in that direction yet. We'll save that for another podcast. How about that? Is that
okay?
Is that okay?
All right.
You want to talk about it, though?
No.
I think you do, but you
know.
No. All right.
I'm going to zip it. As my daughter would say, zip it.
Zip it. Oh, good gosh.
Okay.
So, all right.
But I'm glad you brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
Opens up a whole new vista.
Mm. I was going to say can of worms, but you say vista.
Mm. Panoramic.
So,
can't
all right.
Wait.
Well, then that's it for today, right?
Okay.
Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.